Welcome to room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hello, hello, Pastor Dave. Hello to
you?
all the listeners.
And how are you doing today?
If I were any better, I'd be twins.
That's
That'd be
cute.
dangerous.
Yeah. Well, you know, I have been watching some TV old time shows. I'm in my 60s, and I kind of like going back and watching some of those shows
Yeah,
I watched when I
so
was
do
a
I.
kid growing up. And one of them was The Brady Bunch.
He took my dog.
I did not.
Maybe there's a simple explanation for this.
There is. He took it.
Maybe you put her down someplace.
No, I didn't. He was right here on the couch. Then she was gone. And he was gone, too. Well, I just walked in the other room to toot my kazoo. Because I like to walk when I toot. I'm going to tell Daddy on him.
Oh, sweetheart. Daddy's gone to play golf. And anyway, we don't want to bother Daddy about this on his day off. Well, maybe we can figure out what happened.
I told you what happened. He took it.
I didn't.
Come on, Bobby, you can tell us.
What?
Where'd you hide Cindy's doll?
I didn't hide it, like I told Mom.
Honest?
Honest.
Would you swear to it? The sacred oath?
Even the sacred oath.
Boy, that proves you didn't take it. No, sir.
Are you sure Bobby took her?
Sure I am. He said he hated Kitty.
I heard him say it lots of times.
And she doesn't even have her bottle. She'll starve to death.
Come on.
Where are we going?
We're gonna get that doll back.
Yeah. If I didn't take it, Cindy shouldn't say he did.
Right. Come on, she can't accuse him and get away with it.
Bobby, you give Kitty back, or...
Now listen here, Cindy. Come on.
What's going on in here?
He took it!
He did not!
He did!
Hold it!
Will somebody fill me in?
Well, Cindy's doll is missing, and the girls think Bobby took it.
Well, Bobby?
I didn't take it.
He did too!
He did not!
The Brady Bunch!
The Brady Bunch! That's the way we
Oh, Cecilia, I loved that show.
I know.
They had so much fun in showing a family with dynamics and things getting all messed up at times, and yet they kind of worked and muddled together. Well, as we enter room 4216, we're going to find the same thing is true today. Also, that we have family dynamics.
Three siblings, three,
and they muddle
squabbling
together.
Numbers chapter 12. Miriam and Aaron began to talk against Moses because of his Cushite wife, for he had married a Cushite. "Has the Lord spoken only through Moses?" they asked. "Hasn't he also spoken through us?" And the Lord heard this. Now Moses was a very humble man, more humble than anyone else on the face of the earth. At once, the Lord said to Moses, Aaron, and Miriam, "Come out to the tent of meeting, all three of you." So the three of them came out. Then the Lord came down in a pillar of cloud. He stood at the entrance to the tent and summoned Miriam and Aaron. When both of them stepped forward, he said, listen to my words. When a prophet is among you, I reveal myself to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams. But this is not true of my servant, Moses. He is faithful in all my house. With him, I speak face to face, clearly, not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Why then were you not afraid to speak against my servant, Moses? The anger of the Lord burned against them, and he left them. When the cloud lifted from above the tent, there stood Miriam, leprous, like snow. Aaron turned toward her and saw that she had leprosy. And he said to Moses, "Please, my Lord, do not hold against us the sin we have so foolishly committed. Do not let her be like a newborn infant, stillborn, coming from its mother's womb with half its flesh eaten away." So Moses cried out to the Lord, "Oh God, please heal her." The Lord replied to Moses, "If her father had spit in her face, would she not have been in disgrace for 7 days? Confine her outside the camp for 7 days. After that, she can be brought back." So Miriam was confined outside the camp for 7 days, and the people did not move on till she was brought back. After that, the people left Hazeroth and encamped in the desert of Paran.
You know, this story of Miriam and Aaron and Moses, it kind of relates to the Brady Bunch arguing. I mean, they were brothers and sisters.
Yes, they were.
But there's more going on there than that. As I've looked and looked and looked at this story, Miriam is dealing with some pride. Her baby brother is getting all this attention. And hey, God speaks to me just like God speaks to Moses. And why can't I have as much attention and
favor and high stuff among the people?
Exactly. And that's why God comes down in the cloud. It notes, by the way, right in the middle there, Moses is so humblest man of the world. That was in there because he wouldn't call her to task to say, "Miriam, settle down here." He couldn't do that. He was too humble. So God did it in his place and said, "Miriam, you know, I speak to prophets through revelations, dreams. He speaks through visions. But this Moses guy here, I speak to him face to face." And what God is saying there is person to person, not that Moses saw his face, because we know from other references he doesn't see his face, but he does see the form of God. And God was just basically saying to Miriam, "Slow down, back down. You're being too prideful." And then he punishes her to make sure she understands her place. And the punishment isn't that great because it's 7 days, but he also makes sure everybody sees this because her pride probably carried everywhere through the camp. You know, personally, I can kind of relate to this. As a pastor, sometimes I'm not preaching, but I'm sitting in the pew and I have to listen to a pastor give a sermon. And I'm sitting there going, "Well, you missed this. And oh, you missed this. Oh, you had a perfect layup to do a wonderful sharing of the gospel and how good it is." And
really? I never thought about pastors doing that.
Oh my gosh, we're the worst. We're the worst because we think we can do better than everybody else.
Oh no, no, no! You are not the worst.
And
no.
That's Miriam.
Okay,
can you relate to this sort of?
Yes, I can. Especially if you're starting the podcast. I really started loving reading in church. And a while ago, we had a new seminary student. And they were reading, and I was not that day. And I was hearing blah, 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 blah. And I'm sitting there, no, 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 you do it like this. Blah, 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 blah.
So you can relate to that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point here is, but it's one step further than that. The point God especially was making, not just general pride, but this was his representative, his spokesman, the office of the person speaking on behalf of God. So it's God himself. So Miriam was almost being prideful against God. I can be as good as you. Because Moses wasn't just an ordinary guy. He was the prophet of God. Just as pastors aren't just people, they are in an office speaking on behalf of God. And so Moses was speaking on behalf of God. And that's why God got so upset. You know, pride is one of those challenging things, and it wasn't just in the Old Testament. It's throughout the whole Bible. In fact, Jesus faced this in his ministry with some of his disciples. If you could read a section about this, we'll hear about Jesus dealing with his disciples.
Mark 9, verses 33 to 40. They came to Capernaum. When he was in the house, Jesus asked them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" But they kept quiet because on the way they had been arguing about who was the greatest. Sitting down, Jesus called the 12 and said, "If anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all." He took a little child, had him stand among them. Taking him in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes one of these little children in my name welcomes me. Whoever welcomes me does not welcome me, but the one who sent me. Whoever is not against us is for us." "Teacher," John said, "we saw a man driving out demons in your name. We told him to stop because he is not one of us." "Do not stop him," Jesus said. "No one who does a miracle in my name can in the next moment say anything bad about me. For whoever is not against us is for us." Things came into my head as we were reading this. I'd like to come back to them.
Okay.
First, I had a very hard time. Miriam gets punished. Aaron does not. Not fair.
Well,
it's always picking on the women.
Whenever you say fair,
I know. Just,
the parent jumps up and
I know.
Life ain't fair.
And I know.
It seems like God ain't fair. He's merciful. And I think that's part of the answer here. In reading some of the commentaries in the back thing, a couple thoughts come out. One, it seems like Miriam, who is the oldest, is kind of that bossy oldest daughter who's kind of running the ship. And we know from other spots that Aaron kind of, oh, okay, that sounds like a good idea.
The golden calf, for instance.
Like a golden calf. And so I think Miriam was the instigator here and not Aaron. And he just kind of, oh, okay. She is more to blame. Secondly, if Aaron would have gotten leprosy, he's the high priest who has to approve people of being clean. If he were sent out of the, there'd be no one left to verify they're clean and can come back.
Well, and so, in later years, there were several high priests, were there not, who could,
yes,
could do this?
Okay. There were, but not at this point. Okay. Not at this point. And so God was, I think, protecting the office of high priest by not doing Aaron. Mm-hmm. Also, God understood the heart of Aaron, even when he begged Moses, please pray for her. You could see the panic, the remorse. I think God already saw that instantly. He was repentive. She was not. She was still arrogant until she saw herself white as snow. Then I think it went, oh, I went too far. Aaron realized his sin right away. I don't think she did.
You, as we were talking this through, and I said, why is Miriam punished? Aaron's not. And you said, wait a minute, punished or consequences?
There's a fine line between those two words. Yeah. And when we chatted about this earlier, and I said, why not use the word consequence instead of punishment? You said,
Punishment's the natural way to speak here.
Yeah, and I think you're right. This is a punishment from God. Ooh. Consequences would be, I'm robbing a bank, I get shot. That's a consequence of my robbing the bank, I get shot. It's a result of a natural cause of something happening. I go off and have an adulterous affair, I shouldn't be surprised if I get syphilis, gonorrhea, or shot by my wife. Those are consequences.
Yes. Well, shot by a wife is not.
Punishment of consequence. That's everything.
So the natural causes is consequences. What someone else chooses to do as a response to your action, that could be considered punishment.
Yes, that right? And that's what God does here.
Second question.
Yeah.
It says in the first part that Miriam and Aaron were, well, that this was the excuse. They were upset because Moses had married a Cushite wife. What was that about?
Yeah, there's not a full agreement here.
Wasn't Zipporah of some other?
She was a Cushite, or sometimes called Ethiopian. And here the real question or concern is, she's not a full blood Israelite. And aren't you supposed to be full-blooded Israelites? And later on, God would say, don't marry Canaanites or whatever.
Yeah, right.
And well, if I can read into this two and two, Cushites and Ethiopians, like Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, was a believer in the true God.
Sure.
And so they weren't prohibited by God from marrying that different nationality. So they were told not to marry a Canaanite because they didn't believe in the true God, but Baal and Malak.
So was Zipporah then Cushite, or do we know?
I think a Cushite meant an Ethiopian, just another name for it. And when she brought this up, that was just a little leverage point, because she was really upset with Moses because of leadership.
Right.
And she was using any excuse she could. And so, well, yeah, you married a different nationality. And that was just a starting point to get a kind of a lever into the rock to push it away.
Right.
I think, Cecilia, you had a few more questions, did you not?
All right. Aaron says, please don't make her like a newborn baby, a stillborn baby whose flesh has been half rotted away.
Yeah. When we read that, it's like, whoa.
Ew.
What do you think?
I think it was, well, kind of duh. Usually a stillborn baby has been dead in the womb for a while, and it's not getting nourishment.
I think you're right. And it, basically dead.
Right.
And back in that culture, that was huge. Children were important then because they were their social security. They were their SSDI or an SSI. Right. And the way that they could survive. And so children were vital for their older life.
Mm-hmm. Then I had to note that this isn't as much a question, but when Miriam shows up and has leprosy, and and Aaron sees this, he immediately says to Moses, not God, but Moses, please, my Lord, pray that she'll be healed. Isn't it quite a contrast between that and what was happening?
Yeah, that's a good observation, Cecilia. He is submitting himself to Moses as the leader at that point, because he's calling him Lord. And Lord here isn't meaning like the supreme God, but
no,
just you're my, I'm under you.
As I often hear in church, it doesn't have a capital. It's not capitalized. So it's,
yeah.
And that's hard for us to tell sometimes.
It can be. Yeah. And it's a good point that here we see Aaron humbles himself and takes away his pride, and he immediately does the best thing he can. He turns to Moses and asks for his assistance on behalf of his sister.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Something we all should be about is turning to our Lord, Jesus, and asking for assistance for other people. It's something we can all be doing. Now, and I don't just say that lightly. It is something we all should be doing, is praying for other people a lot.
Yes.
You know, Cecilia, after that last segment, we took some time off and we're chatting, and you commented, Miriam, what did you say about Miriam?
We hear that when she dies and she's buried.
Mm-hmm. With her people.
Yes, and that was significant.
Yeah, yeah. And even here, it should not be overlooked in chapter 12, after 7 days, she's brought back into the camp.
Not to mention that, but the camp did not move until she
was clean. Yeah. And that just is another description of God's mercy. He was patient and waited for Miriam to repent, to be healed, brought back in, and then they moved on. And you know, God does the same for you and for me and for all of you listeners. He is patient with us, having mercy, waiting and waiting before we move on, because he wants all people to be part of his family. Even when they squabble like the Brady Bunch.
Yes.
And we do at times squabble like the Brady Bunch.
Mm-hmm.
But our God is a loving God who says, kids, come on, let's straighten up.
So
would love to hear from you. Maybe you have some family squabbles you'd like to share with us.
Please.
You can let us know and write us at
info@not-alone.
That's NOT-ALONE
.net.
And I think that's spelled NET.
I think so.
Yeah, good. Okay.
But I know we don't have to.
I passed spelling today.
That's right. Yay.
Okay.
But I know we don't have to think about this to say
we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits. The Brady Bunch. Season 1, Episode 7, Kitty Carryall is Missing. The Brady Bunch theme, written by Sherwood Schwartz, sung by the Brady Bunch Kids. And our bunch of musicians, well, two of them, Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn.